Log Talk Radio.
Looks like we're shy of one horse.
You brought too many.
time again.
Well, what does one do on hump day? Takes care of business with another hump day special. My name is Michael Lewis Ingram, DJ Annie Gorman again. It's good to be in the house with you with another edition of Soul Tree Radio in the Raw. Soul Tree Radio in the Raw, proudly sponsored by BASMNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Hat Sports Network. And get all the good shit. The Who, What, When, Where, Why, and Sometimes How, right here, right now, at www.BASMNewsroom.com. Shout out to members of the Brother Man Network. And thank you to everybody who sent love as COVID was trying to do its last little bit of damage, my black ass. I am here. I'm in one piece. And I fought back. And I'm still here. So, this is my man Dolomite was sitting way down in the jungle deep. Oh, bad as COVID. Trying to step on my feet. But we did not win. That's why I'm in the skin of it. Do what I got to do. Do what I love to do. And thanks to all the members of the extended family. Now, there's a lot to get up with, so we take care of the media business. As my man Reggie is in the mix. Reggie, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. How you feeling today, family?
You're doing fine, brother. You're doing fine.
All right. Prayers and blessings out to you and your family.
All right. Well, we got a lot of stuff to take on tonight, and there's no better place to start than in New York City. Now, New York City, of course, would be the home of one, Donald J. Trump. What a joke. There's a scene from The Moment of Soldier story where David Alan Grier's character says, "All right, Hitler, the niggas are coming to get your ass." Well, this is one that's getting got. And Mr. Trump has had his wives in the mix as well. This is one time where you can't escape. And we know about folks like Trump. I think Wesley Snipes hit right in the head when he said, "Some motherfuckers like to skate, I can't upfell." Donald Trump's one of those people. Patrick, can you hear me?
Live and living color, fellas.
Yes, indeed. And nothing bothers him more than being told what to do. And nothing bothers him more than being told to do something by someone who's not white, blonde, and in blue eyes.
That's for sure.
Donald Trump for years got away with the fact that he had a huge financial war chest to play with. He was supposed to be a so-called fourth rank, a fifth rank. He had unlimited funds to do whatever he needed to do with. His father must have said he was a pimp, trying to play the law out like that. You know, state-wise.
Actually, he ain't got that many funds, but that's all right.
What was that?
They're finding out. Actually, he ain't got that many funds. They're finding out.
Oh, yeah. And they are. But y'all know what they say when you give a dance, you got to pay the band. And Letitia James, Attorney General for New York State, waited for years. Get him on one thing, you know, she knew she didn't get him on. Fraud. Now, you can have money. You can use money to get more money. I think the phrase is other people's money. You flash cash to improve an investment situation. So, we're not upset at that. We're upset at the fact that for 10 years, got away with it. Manipulated cash on New York City and hoping to create funds that would make him a king of New York. Now, nothing wrong with being king of New York, but pay your fucking taxes. And the taxes is what he's about to get him, because he had no reason to not pay it. He was enough to believe that paying taxes was beneath him. Can anybody tell me why you would live in a place like New York and think you can get away without paying any taxes?
Simple. When you see you're above the law, you can get away with it. That's simple.
Yeah.
And the other part about it is this, is that when all he's doing, like, it's on him, his buddies that are in the same kind of orbit, they're worried now because, yes, they say they'll come after him, they'll come after me. That's the real thing.
That's exactly right. Yeah. He made himself vulnerable by running his mouth. Now, there's a phrase, big, big catches, big rat. I would like to believe this is one of the biggest rats that have been caught in a long time. And Sister Gal didn't say anything. She just factfully stated the information and told the world that this boy is broken.
Well, it was obvious, man. You know, I mean, we got the situation here in Jersey City when the Clifton family finally got real, because they had they're going to build two towers in downtown Jersey City, which is going to be tremendous. But had $140 million tax abatement, and they said, "Oh, hell no!" So now I think it's down to like 40.
So when you weigh all this out, you know, cash is missing. You know, sometimes you can buy something or you can inflate the value of something by saying, I'm going to buy this property because it's here, it's going to be worth more. Okay, no problem there. But if somebody thinks it's worth more, you can't make it worth more. And that's essentially what Trump did. Bought property and inflated the value of the property. That's nice if you can find a sucker will buy it. But if you can't, you out of luck. And now what?
Got to pay the price, bro.
That's good. Yeah.
And when the attorney general got 1,000 pages of testimony against you, but well, you can't lie around that one.
There you go. And you're also speaking to the legal aspect of this. Whatever the government says you owe, you owe. You have to prove that you don't owe it. And
you know something else? Initially, they said they were going to charge him $250 million, but the lawyer said, that's a starting point.
That's right. Hold the hell up. What y'all telling me is that they're going to tax his ass for the, like 10 years for back tax and penalty? Is that what I mean?
No, Rich. The fine that he has to initially, that the suing was $250 million. But tonight, the guy said, he said, that's nothing. He said, that's the starting point. And he said, a judge and the people in legal counsel with them people are going to hit him with way more than that. Now, I see the guys get estimated between $200 to $750 million that he has to pay back, which is why the guy's trying to run for president, anything he can do, because these fools are giving the money. Fools with no teeth and no money and no job are sending him $10 to give him money. I mean,
now, remember my...
So these lawyers don't even know if they're going to get paid.
Say what? That's true.
He's lawyers, so you know, they're going to get paid. And that's his M.O.
There you go.
His stiff bitch in a minute. Look at his casinos. Last minute, he,
right.
He can't file bankrupt on that tax, though.
Wait. Hillary Clinton put it best. When she debated him, she says, how can a guy become himself a great businessman when the casino goes broke? He said, how can he even do that? How can he be that bad with businessmen? Casinos don't go broke.
Oh, yeah.
I swear, to go bankrupt a casino, damn.
That's not the best one aspect. Donald Trump wasted almost as much money as he reportedly had.
Okay, but hey, guys, maybe I'm boo-boo the fool, but certain oligarch over in Russia, do you think them banks or whatever can float him the money? I mean, hell, he doesn't. The damn
not
country.
Now. Well, Richard, they gave money all along. They gave him money all along. See? And that's why he was protecting all his Russian. I mean, the very fact that you have Russian people come to the White House and leave the U.S. press out of the meeting. Come on.
Thank you. For a closed door press conference. Nobody was allowed to come in.
The Russian press could get in, but the American press couldn't. I go, what you got to hide, man? You know,
for real.
Yeah, but they backed him.
And it bothers him more that this black woman went out of her way to get his ass.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
You know,
100% correct.
He's calling her everything under the sun in English and German. This was not supposed to happen. This sister cow was not supposed to put the hammer down. He knew it was coming. Because he's trying to get action out of New York and in Florida. And that wasn't enough.
So you're telling
it
me that the sister in New York that finally got the screws to him?
Oh, yeah.
I'm saying not only does she have the screws, she got the lock.
So when is Giuliani? When they going to get Giuliani had? That's how we know the vampire. When they going to get his ass?
Well, I'm hoping for that. The one I want to go next, really, was Giuliani, but he's hiding in the wind, is Jared Kushner, because he borrowed that $2.2 billion from the Sally Wayne government, made that deal while he was on the cabinet of the government, using taxpayers' money to go back and make that happen. Going, wait a minute. How can he go up back and forth and make a $2 billion deal as he leaves office? And all the deal was
That's
made
right.
by him on taxpayers' money. What?
One aspect of being in New York that you don't know. If you live in a rent controlled apartment, you basically get over like a fat rat in a cheese factory.
Mm-hmm.
Rent control is the unkept secret of living in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Rent control is so powerful that there are people who literally scan the newspapers in the obituary column looking to see
mm-hmm.
if somebody died. To
mm-hmm.
see if they can get a shot at their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you live in a certain address and you have rent control, you're not allowed to have the apartment raised to a bigger percentage of a certain amount of rent.
Yep.
That means you can live in Park Avenue and make no money, but if the right person died at the right time, you're in like Flint.
Mm-hmm.
And Trump access to listings of all these apartments. That's part of what allowed him to gain so much footing in real estate. It wasn't any of this self-made man BS.
And Mike, you also got to and also like the fact that he was good at conning people.
Yes,
he was. He played the role. Now, I was talking to my lady. We were watching some stuff on the early this evening. I said, honey, recall when I told you this, what Mike Bloomberg said when he was running for president, when he asked him about Trump, he said, I know a con man when I see one. Now, if Michael Bloomberg, who has 4 or 5 times money than Trump has, if he sees it, come on now. What's wrong with the rest of y'all?
You're right about that. There's no question about it. But nobody cared about Bloomberg. They cared about Trump because he had the charisma that they were looking for.
There you go.
And let's not just count the presidential years. This was from 2010 to 2020. So 10 years. There was time that had nothing to do with the presidency. But he used the presidency to scam more money. He used his job and his kids to pimp out more income.
Get their ass, too. Get Ivanka, too.
That's right.
And his dumbass sons.
And that's what I loved about about what Letitia James did. She got him and the kids. There's no leaving anybody in the wake. I got a professor with me, friend with it. Professor, up here in Yankee country, we say big bait catches a big rat. And Trump looks like a rat that's been caught. First of all, good evening. And what do you say down there? Is he a caught rat or not?
Well, the way we do things down here, we shoot rats. But that's another story for another time. With the way they... The way you liberal do so, we like to see the handcuffs behind the back. Riding in the back of the police car instead of a limousine.
Since his
lawyers, I guess he has a new lawyer this week. Either way, at some point in time, you know. We like to see, hand up, take the Fifth Amendment or whatever. What really means, or whatever line he decides to use. But on the real, hopefully they have got him 4 ways to Sunday. I hope this young lady don't turn up dead on the highway somewhere, because these people. I know they said his ex-wife fell down the stairs. I believe that is as much as I believe that bears don't get stung by bees or whatever. I think it's a lie. That's how we see it from down here. We think that he was a con man. When I first heard about him back in the 70s, one of the first things I ever heard about him, I heard over and again about him to do business. That his business model was, I'll pay you so much, and then I'll stop paying you. Now, if you want more money, you got to talk to my lawyer, and you got to sue
that's
me.
Right. That's what he did.
And he was allowed to do this, not just by other people, other business people. He was allowed to do this by the various governments that he did business with, whether it was states, New York, Florida, wherever. He ran that same scam on some of the same people, and they kept buying it. So it makes me wonder, how stupid do you have to be a millionaire just as much as how smart you have to be a millionaire? Because some of these people got taken more than once and still went back more because it was him. Not to mention all these people who are so out on the limb with him now that slowly but surely, as they see that, you can see the propeller on the Titanic now, and a few people have finally figured out that we cannot win with him as much as we thought we could win, we couldn't win without him. So now, here, there, there, and yonder, you have some people coming out and saying, hey, we need to dump this clown. Of all people, that parrot, I think he's from South Carolina, wherever he's from, making all that noise,
yep,
all these years, all of a sudden, right, he's coming out saying, hey, we got to dump this dude. McConnell, you know, and I hate to say this about old people, but he, you know, he must have been castrated years ago. And that's just my humble opinion. Oh, by the way, Mr. Ohio State, I actually watched the, dot in the eye.
Dot in the eye of a band, which is a ritual.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
No,
so
shit.
Everybody don't get to do that.
Script Ohio, I think is what it's called. You know, and I was watching them. I was watching. I know this is totally off subject, but I was watching the way they march, and I'm wondering because I know the former director of the band at Florida A&M. Graduate school. And my question is, did he take that from them the way they marched, or did they take that from him?
They were doing that. The script, they've been doing a script to Ohio for 60, 70 years, man. No.
Okay.
What he did, I forgot the brother's name, but I know you're talking about. He came from A&M. Oh, man, because I see him all the time. Yes. No, not Dr. Foster. Another man from Florida A&M. When I was there, came from A&M to help the band against the movement, which they couldn't do because 90% of the white boys can't spit two gum at the same time with movement. But he did have a little flavor in terms of the tone of instruments could be a little better. But them guys just straight ahead. They're precision markers, marchers. You got to give them credit. I got to give them credit for that. But, if you want precision, you'll get that. If you want to get, you want to hear something different, you got to go with some black bands, go HBCU's bands. I saw some standing with Morehouse.
I want to get a scorecard of what happened at the game and overall vibe from this and stuff in 2020.
Oh, yeah. I'll give it to you. Well, here's a couple of things. First of all, one of the things they did, they messed up the credentials. And Tony was here, he'd tell you about that. But again, like I said, the guy Mike Grimm, who handled it from years, he's been retired like 4 or 5 years now. The difference I handled it. What they did, some of the stuff I found out, Morehouse had to get some credential releases. Howard had to get some credential releases, and then they put up this thing on from MetLife and the people there that they were holding it. So the combination of three messed things up. I got my credential call on Friday night, last Friday, and that never happened before. And well, that's another story. Once we got in, the vibe was a beautiful day. It was a beautiful day, and a lot of folks were there. The crowd, I think, was big. What I was used to want to see, but I didn't have time when I got there because I went right into the stadium.
I didn't see as many venues
as I wanted to, but huh?
How big a crowd was that? How many did they know?
Oh, they estimated 35,100, something like that.
All right.
Which is okay. Which is okay.
Yeah.
Compared to the one where me and my group with Starter, we had 56,000 people, which caused a problem. That's another story. But the vibe was good. One thing I can say about Howard's team, you could tell the difference once you saw them in their warm-ups. Their warm-ups like pro teams do. The reason, they got three pro guys who play the NFL on the coaching staff. You could see it immediately. First half, I must give Morgan State a lot of credit. They hung tough the first half. They missed a couple of scoring opportunities that they should have got some points, But once they couldn't score at the in the first half, and beginning of the third quarter, the Howard team just won. And they have this guy at tackle. His name is Omakwa. This boy is 6'8" and a half, 360 pounds. Somebody in league is going to pick him up. It shows them. And he had a guy like 6'1" on as an end trying to get by. I'm going, that's illegal. The one thing I can say about Howard's going to play Yale in 2 weeks. Now, I didn't put in a piece I wrote. I started, but I didn't do it. The two black Ivy League schools, Howard and Morehouse. Well, of course, now Morehouse is going to play Yale in 2 weeks. I think Tony's going to do something with them also. But here's one thing I did find out with this, was interesting. And I ran to a guy who happened to be a frat brother on the field. This is pregame. That's why I like getting the games 3 hours, 2 hours before the game. And he works with CBS. And some of the things he said was what I had heard. He confirmed them. NBC did the telecast. They did it on NBC Sports Peacock Network. All right?
Right.
Walmart sponsored it. I give him credit. That and it's called the inaugural Toyota HBCU Kickoff Classic. There'll be another one next year. I don't know what teams are playing. It met the mark, and they said this is what they're going to do it next year. The thing that I like about it most is this: they're doing three games. They're doing obviously they did one for Morehouse and Howard. But they're going to do one for for Southern and Grambling around Easter time, like they usually do. And then they're going to have an all-star game in December also, all done by the Peacock Network. But the brother at CBS told me things that we've been talking about, things that I mentioned, that they're looking for two things that – there's going to be a bid. Now, also, I should say this: HBO Go was all over that bad boy. Which is Byron Allen. You know, they were there doing their thing. And also, I forgot the name of the company. The point is, like the brother told me, who was a programmer for CBS, he said that HBCU schools need to coordinate things now because they're open to get some visuals that they never had before. Let me put it as bluntly as possible. You need to tune in on YouTube and listen to Roland Martin's expose on what HBCU schools need to do. He laid it out to the letter. And basically he said what we've been saying. He said they got too many people behind the scenes that have established contracts and think because you get $1 million, it's nothing. It's nothing to what you should be doing, selling your own
product.
That's true. 100%. And he laid out just what it should be done because he said, I've seen it. And he said, what school did he say? Oh God! What? One school
he's already helped the Gulf Coast League get a contract, and they're NAIA.
Mm-hmm,
they don't even have
football.
Between him and Dr. Cavill, because I think I mentioned this once before. Many years ago, when the CIAA was still in Virginia, there was this meeting held with some HBCU presidents nationally from the CIAA with Bob Lanier, and Bob Lanier came in.
Yeah,
he had one or two black lawyers, but the most of them were white. And there were, you know, the whole gist of the conversation coming from these, quote, black educators was how much are these white boys going to make? Mm-hmm. It had nothing to do with how much can we make? And see, he was talking the same kind of stuff 20-some years ago because the CIAA was in from 77 until 92. So it was before 92 when this occurred. At any rate, we and most other knowledgeable people, and if he can keep his foot out of his mouth, is some of the same stuff that Sanders is saying.
Mm-hmm.
You need people who have a business acumen versus a, you know, this is why most schools have gotten away from hiring former coaches slash teachers as ADs. And this is why you need business people in the forefront doing these things because, you know, there's more to, I mean, Kabil and Martin both have been preaching this for at least 2 years that I know. There's more than just the streaming money. There's more than just the satellite money. There's all kind of money out there. And see, before we get over, is one, they're locked into whatever the conference is locked into. That's understandable.
Okay.
But
all right.
What about all the other games? So say on any given Sunday, Saturday, the CIAA got six games going. They're only going to broadcast one, maybe two. Same thing with the SWAC, one, maybe two. MEAC, one, maybe two. Afternoon and evening. Okay. What about all those other games that's hanging out there?
Okay.
You know, what about them? One of the things that Martin has said, well, Martin was saying, as good as the deal that Baron Allen negotiated with the with Go Network, there was more money left. There was probably almost as much money left on the table as it
was.
Well,
let me ask.
Picked up.
Let me ask. How many times was the game streamed? And Tony, good evening. How many times was the game streamed? What was your overall assessment of the game itself, and the fact that they took two teams that weren't necessarily stars and made a promise to have another game like this, what does this say for the potential financially?
Well, the game that I watched actually was Southern and Texas Southern. There was a lot of people there disguised as empty seats. The game itself was okay.
Okay.
I mean, it showed that they were better than Southern for especially after the first 5 or 10 minutes. But you know, it was a good defensive game, but still, Southern couldn't score at all. Southern never scored at all. Southern, I passed him to Southern Greater, so he had a. You need a hug because I saw your team play. They did like our team did last week, didn't score at all. And he just laughed. But, you know, we all know what those two schools mean, even if this is one of the years where Southern from Louisiana got stunk. Because that ain't going to last. In the next year or two, the roles are very likely to be reversed, or at least it'll be a much, 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 much better game. And, you know, and one of the things that I've noticed in the last couple of weeks and watching games on TV, I'm sick of Jimmy Walker, I'm sick of Joe Namath, and several other people out there that I'm really sick of. And the reason I'm sick of them, all these same people that were advertising on other media before are now they're now buying into these HBCU games. But on all likelihood, there was nobody asking them to advertise with them. I watched one of the satellite stations here from Capital Broadcasting. They have games on from mid-major schools, It's the same thing. The same ones that are going after the Marshalls and all the Liberty University, you know, schools like that. Those same, yeah, the same people that are advertising with HBCUs now have been advertising these other jokers for a long, long time. So, like, again, like I say, you know, to me it shows, okay, they didn't have because they didn't ask. That's biblical. You don't have that because you ask not.
Fred, you're 100% correct, which is why I'm really Martin said what I'm saying. All these college presidents need to get out the way, get some business people to go over contracts. Stop saying, we got a $2 million deal. Well, $2 million, so what? You might be get $20 million if you got the right people to get the contracts.
Okay.
And that's the simple guys can get to the same thing.
Go ahead. First and foremost, one of the things you got to, you know, before you get into the talk about the deal, what is the market? Who is your market?
Mm-hmm.
Market, and how much, you know, what's the quality of your market? And apparently, these markets aren't that different, because again, and see, we had something happen here a couple of weeks ago that was hard to believe. The University of North Carolina traveled to Boone, North Carolina. People going from Chapel Hill to Asheville usually won't even stop or slow down to go to Boone, to their Carolina. Carolina went all the way up into they went to the mountaintop and almost got their ass drugged.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and then they went and played in the suburbs of Atlanta, Georgia State, another school that they normally wouldn't touch. But the rule of thumb here was go down and play them, hit up our fan base, and apparently they're not playing Georgia Tech this year, at least not down there. So whatever it is, we played two mid-major schools back-to-back, touch and go, because everybody in North Carolina knows the one thing, if we were attacked by our enemy, we wouldn't put nobody in Carolina's defense out there to take any stop no one.
Mm. Well, and Fred, the other school in North Carolina is even though it's not an HBCU school, but it's attracting more attention than ever. App State, what they did, the fact that ESPN did their morning show there, the numbers went through the roof. Imagine how many people who don't know nothing about that part of North Carolina going to at least apply to that school. And that's the whole point, Fred. You're saying regional networks are the way to go if done correctly, but you got to have the right contracts and the people who know how to negotiate. Don't bring some college president there who know who took a course in accounting course or one of his buddies. Get somebody, TV people, to do it. And that's what the guy from CBS said, because that's the biggest problem.
Yep. That is the biggest problem. One of the things that I heard here, and it was somewhat jokingly or comical, but it's so, you know, we need people who can split apps, who can split dollars, not people who can split birds. And this is the kind of stuff, this is the kind of thing we're doing. You know, I said, I heard the comments that His Majesty was making. Again, he is only telling part of the truth because he's talking about what Marshall got and what somebody else.
Yeah.
First of all, you're talking about schools. You're talking about schools who have and fund 63 or 65 scholarships major level. App State, because it's an upper level now, it actually funds 85. And see, those are the kind of things that you're looking at. Okay, taking it a step further. when you look at what the quote-unquote real money is, you know, yes, FAMU should have been flown up, but it could have been there an hour and 20 minutes. They could have come up in the morning and left the next morning, all they care. But that didn't happen. But see, when you fire an AD who also assistant AD who quote asked too many questions, you know, the wrong kind of questions. Actually, the AD as well as assistant who handled certification, because the reality is those guys were not ineligible; they just were not certified. And the difference is, ineligible you can't play. Certified means you just haven't cleared the clearing house yet. That's two different things, two totally different things. And because
that's in the thing, Cal.
When the guy left FAMU, correction, he was asked to leave
that.
FAMU. He went to Tulane. Guess who went with him? The guys who had worked with him at the MEAC office, they were clearing their whole conference. These guys are the gurus of that. And guess what? They left to come there because, see, Carolina has, and we just use Carolina as an example. Carolina has a crew of people who certified and cleared their football team. They don't have an office that part of their duties are the football team. They have a person who handles basketball. And you're only talking about 20 guys, 20 guys a minute.
That's right.
You have a person, just like they have their own SID and a supporting cast for him, to include student interns. So they have a band they travel in most times when they go to places. But all things, but see, you have a situation where you have these presidents looking at all that money going into athletics. Never mind all that and all that money as well as exposure that comes in athletic. They don't see it that way because they think somebody gonna come on campus to hear and somebody on the diagram sentence. He picks the hand.
And that's the problem go on, Mike.
Yeah, what else was accessible during that weekend? I mean, we know that for a fact these were two schools that were plum schools in terms of their draws. But 35,000 people showed up. There was a crowd encouraged by the possibility of, y'all come in next year, we'll really bring the house out for you. Or was it more like, all right, we took two teams, and so what?
I think Mike, the goal should be at least anywhere from 40,000 to 45,000 people.
All right.
Or more. Now you got Toyota sponsoring it. When you got Toyota and Walmart, Johnson & Johnson, all putting the money in for sponsors, you can get 45,000.
Right. Exactly.
I told Helen Struts on Monday, who's part of the group that working from Metland, y'all need to get some black folks involved in this outright. Because you got no black folks anywhere around here to get you tuned into what you should be doing. Well, it's something we got to consider. I consider you don't need to do it.
Yeah.
You know, the more and more, you know, me and Patrick talked on Monday night, and I've been talking to different folks, and it was great interacting with a lot of these folks over the weekend. The more and more and more I think about this, it's about three factors. Number one, absolutely you need a business person to be running these things. You know, you see what the Raiders did in a sense, hiring the lady that works from Vegas to run their thing. That's going to be the future of professional sports to a certain extent. I think you're already seeing that in a lot of things, but you got to look at it sort of like, you know, I'm not an expert on it, but you sort of have to look at it like the stock market in a sense. Mm-hmm. And you have to be familiar with, you know, depreciating values and what have you. And the thing that gets me with a lot of these HBCUs, and we talked about it all the time, they're still trapped in the late 60s, early 70s with their mentality of trying to whatever. And they have to realize that now, yes, TV is important and all that, but you've got other factors. The internet is the big change, because one of the reasons why Byron Allen's thing has a huge potential is that it incorporates TV, because he has all these different TV stations in big cities, you know, New York, Philly, and California, what have you. But you also have HBCU Go is also on Fire Stick. So for folks that don't have, you know, quote unquote traditional regular television, they can watch, you know, they're able to watch the game and see. In a sense, you've got to think outside the box in the sense of, yes, TV is important and all the other stuff, but you have to factor in so many other non-traditional things now. You can't just be, you can't be narrow-minded in this. There are, one of the reasons why the NFL isn't going anywhere is because they've got so many, they have so many money streams, and that's what that's the thing that these HBCUs have to be educated on. They're still caught in this whole, we're an institution first and or whatever. And
we're not academic.
Well, see, the thing is, they still don't get the fact that you basically work hand in hand. Unfortunately, what winds up happening in so many instances, the left hand refuses to talk to the right hand in this, i.e., academics versus athletics. And the thing is, I'll say it before and I'll say it again, the very schools who they worship at the altar, they realize this. Duke realizes that seeing kids in their T-shirts and sweatshirts will make money. Northwestern knows it. Stanford knows it. But see, the HBCUs, and again, we understand that, of course, it is an academic thing. But if you're going to be that narrow-minded about it and then wonder why you don't get as much play, then again, you're not showing, you're showing more of your ignorance than anything else. And again, you have to have that stock market mentality in the sense of, look, right now, for good, bad, or indifferent, and I tend to think good, it's HBCUs are prominent. They've always, now, for us who have been a part of it, they've always been prominent, but now you've got other entities that are interested, but also these other entities are realizing the value of it, because one of the things I have always said from day one, the history of HBCU sports doesn't have to take a backseat to anyone, whether it's the SEC, whether it's the Big 12, whether it's the Big 10, the Ivy League, or what have you. One of the reasons why you had 35,000 in Jersey, a lot of it had to do with the fact that people remember what that game, know what that game still means. Having that game,
That's right.
If anyone has ever read Bill Roden's book, $100,000 Slaves, this is the story that he talked about in his book, where he was one of the players on that Morgan State team that played Grambling and played the inaugural, I guess it was then called the Whitney M. Young Classic.
The Whitney Young Classic, that's right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And for those who are uninitiated, mm-hmm. that was really the first, not the, it wasn't the first classic, but it was the first one that had the impact because this was a game, ironically again, it was played on 3 o'clock on a Saturday
yes.
afternoon on ABC's Wide World of Sports. Now I know there's some. Now, I know some youngins out there saying, "When the Wide World of Sports is Wide World of Sports," but you know, you look that up. The thing is, they recognized the historical implications of this. I think the fact that they got 35,000 on a classic that hadn't been played in. I want to say at least 6 or 7 years. And see, now they have a whole year to build this up, figure out what teams they want to bring to New York, and like
right,
you said,
Tony.
Patrick, they've got the sponsorship, so that's going to be a problem. See, the funny thing is, and as much as it pains me to say it, historically. That other team on the other side of the river has always had a big hand in that, you know, from day one, and this was even before George got there, the Yankees were always a huge part of that Whitney M. Young Classic. And now I tried to pick up a program over the weekend. I wasn't able to pick one up, but the one thing that I was surprised was that I didn't see a presence of the Yankees, and it was kind of surprising, but maybe they're waiting, you know, maybe they're waiting to see how the first year goes, and then maybe next year, this time, they'll be in it. But look, we've been saying it for years, we've been screaming it for years, the potential's there. The product is there. It's not so much about potential. The product is there on and off the field. You've got great players out there. You've got great coaches. It's just a matter of being given a platform. And see, think about this. As an entity right now, HBCU sports, especially HBCU football, there are very few like small white conferences that are going to get the kind of play that the HBCUs are getting. It's nice that, you know, every Saturday you can watch, you know, depending on your cable system or what you have, you know, or whatever, you can watch upwards to, say, 7 to 10 games every Saturday. Now, if things keep going as is, that can be doubled. And it's again, it's something that can grow and grow and grow. But you've got so many of these gatekeepers, whether they be media folk, whether they be athletic directors, whether they be school presidents, that want to stay in the, God forgive me for saying this, the children's circuit. And
you've
got to go beyond that. Because if you realize what, you know, the sad thing is, I think a lot of them don't realize what they have in regards to the product.
I got X Factor right in the mix. I want to introduce the X Factor, and that's the money. Tony hitting on it, Patrick's hitting on it, Fred's hitting on it, but the revenue stream that can come with this is potentially humongous. So why are they trying to limit it to 2 or 3 people to close the door and not make it open to some entrepreneurial brother who's thinking in terms of, we got something that's going to make money, it's popular, let's let this thing grow and get even.
Yeah, Simon. There's some visceral viewpoints. First of all, what's happening to everybody? But you have to look at it from the standpoint that HBCUs are in the southeast region of the United States predominantly.
Yeah.
Predominantly, that's their location. If you want to gather the interest of HBCU football where it has any kind of ratings impact,
say on the Western Seaboard, Midwest, what have you, you have to generate something. So you have to be strong in your region, first of all. So if a game's in New Orleans and they're going to have a whatever classic may be, or Memphis, Tennessee, they draw pretty well because it has a regional presence, right? So when you look at a business and you want to advance, or you create a franchise or whatever you want to do with a business build out, you have to know if that franchise is going to be successful. So in other words, McDonald's doesn't put a store everywhere. They do the market research. They look at the demographics. They look at the income strata. It's not reasonable to think that it's going to be this blowout effect for people to be interested in, you know, a North Carolina A&T versus North Carolina Central game in Wyoming, right? Or other words, where the larger brands have that, they have the stage presence, they have the national presence, so they have that of interest. So before anything can be built out, you have to be strong. Now, back to what Tony was mentioning about Yankee Stadium. Now, the McPhail family, M-A-C-P-H-A-I-L, owned the Yankees. And they were always known at Yankee Stadium for predominantly hosting many Negro League games, right? Many Negro League games were hosted there. So the Whitney Young was like a spinoff from the college version of what they were doing with the Negro League. And McPhail is famously on record of saying that when they asked him, will there ever be a black ball player and play for Yankees or into Major League Baseball prior to, he stated, no way. He said, we make so much money renting out Yankee Stadium to these black folks. Why would we want to integrate a player? Because we make so much money when we rent out the stadium. Right? So they've seen the economic impact of that. So New York is a central location, large populace, also it's a tourist location. Right? So people come in, they do more things. You see that in Los Angeles with the Rams. You know, there's no real Rams fan. Those stadiums are always packed by visiting teams who mix in the vacation when they come to Los Angeles so they can feel like Buffalo just took over. We've seen that with Cincinnati. We've seen that with San Francisco. Yep. They tried to cut them off. You cannot do anything regionally and build out a product unless you are strong in your region. So if you have
wouldn't you say also that the SEC is regional and the Big Ten is regional and the Big 12 is regional?
I already mentioned that they have the staying power in the name for a long, long time. So these are established organizations, right? We're talking about when you first start building out a business, you have to be strong in your region first, right, no matter what. And, yes, they're regional, right, because the Pac-12 network is a cable network that person can lease or grab on Roku, but it's strong on the West Coast. Same thing with I can watch the Big Ten channel out here in California. But we all know this historical, this pomp and pageantry of college football, these named schools for many years. So when you're establishing a TV branding as a grassroots, right? This is like really a grassroots startup. Would you say yes or no to that? What's happening with the HBCUs? There's always a minutia of detail, but it leans towards getting that really branding, and that's where Sanders' name and historicals brings that so much attention because he has that national presence going into Jackson State, which creates a lot of highlight towards that, and he uses that. Right, but he's established that on what he did with his pro career, and then what he did with the NFL Network, and on and on and on and on. So if there's going to be a Shaw versus Morehouse football game, right? I mean, I'm certain purpose in Atlanta. Now, rewind to this: if you look at genres like certain music, or AKA what they call hip hop, you know, it's not hip hop, it's shit hop these days, right? But more or less, Master P would make zillions in his region. No one was buying this stuff in Cali, right? No one's buying it here.
And in turn, Go-Go wouldn't be as popular in
there it is.
Say, Louisiana
there it is.
As it is in
like Howard. So that's Howard. Xavier's Master P. Atlanta, right? On and on. Lil Wayne and them dudes, they had to do was sell where they are. Rick Ross and them dudes in Florida, right? You know, in the Southeast region before they got national and started pushing
outward. Superior promotion. Yes.
That's my point. But it's so much the concentration of black folks in the South, you don't even need to go elsewhere to strengthen your thing there because that's what they were selling to, right? I mean, Too Short, these guys in Oakland, Too Short and these brothers, they weren't even being played on the East Coast when they came up at all. It was regional. Again, you know, when I've been Mrs. Ackman, when brother, you know, that started all of this, a black athlete, you know, reached out to me and he was like, yo, you know, work with me on the business development, right? Because that's my background. I mean, you know, many years. It's just something we don't speak on. You can't be a journalist and think you know how to be a treasurer of a bank. You're a journalist. You know what I'm saying? I mean, what can you do with the business? You can have an ego about it, but do you know the minutiae of the details? So there's regional offices and regional branches everywhere. Banks set up on regions. The Fed sets up on regions. You know what I mean? So you have to first be strong in your area. You can be national because these games get picked up nationally anyway with the streaming services, video services, things of that sort as well. Yet to kind of branch out, you can make so much resources where you are by being strong. This literally people get become multi-billionaires. They have no idea. I mean, Chase Bank didn't come to the West Coast until about 10 years ago, 20 years ago probably. They never had a West Coast location, ever. PNC Bank was set up in Pittsburgh. They have no branches on the West Coast. It's brand new that they started reaching past the Mississippi. If you look at successful businesses, that's what they do. You know what I mean? So, in other words, if what's the presence of HBCU football for the locals in the state of South Carolina, the state of North Carolina, the Florida, this, what have you, and if you build that out, it goes national automatically if you have that strength there. Because what's that branding? Everyone wants to get a piece of that, you know? And like, what, 60% of the seafood comes out of the Delta. No, I'm sorry, Delta, outside of Mississippi. Well, the Gulf, thank you. The Gulf, right? 60% of the seafood that feeds you that comes out of the Gulf, right? And so New Orleans is known for, you know, regional cooking and things of that. It's a stress. It's a tourist spot. If you want people to come and have that national thing, you have to build that out. And that's what these schools and institutions have done. UCLA did that way back in the 40s when they were, you know, and beyond when they brought in Jackie, right, because he started at UCLA. You know, that's where he bought. And then the other brothers, that, you know, Woody Strode and another brother, I forgot his name, that came in with Strode.
Washington.
Right?
Washington.
Thank you.
Washington.
Yeah. And then Wooden came out there. And even though so many Louisiana transplants from New Orleans went to South Central Los Angeles, right? They went to L.A. You know, Denzel Washington played that Lady in the Blue Dress or something. You know, he was kind of like
Devil
showing.
Devil in the Blue Dress.
Yeah. He was showing you that kind of vibe that came through there, right? So SoCal, when they did the Stax concert in L.A., right? You know, it's like a zillion brothers and sisters out there. No one, people never thought there was that many black people even in Los Angeles County, let alone you go watch that video. Brothers and sisters all on their best behavior, right, just dancing the party. No fights and shit, just out there for 20 straight concerts or whoever performed. And the thing is, so they had a strong influx there of brothers and sisters there for many, 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 many years. But the branding still there was SC UCLA. But these schools still to these days feed the Pac-12 for all their talent primarily, right? They built out their region. So when you recruit from a school, the first thing you have to where Rutgers sucks, and anyone can relate to this on the East Coast, Rutgers cannot keep that homegrown talent in state for nothing. For zilch. Many years, right? I mean, if Rutgers could keep 70% of the best talent in state football and basketball, they'd be a national power year in, year out.
Yeah, they just taking care of home.
That's my point. And the thing is, you've got to, you know, and so in other words, if you want to eat, you know, as the young as cats like to say, you've got to be strong everywhere. So the thing is, I don't think I could get someone to have a super interest in these things And if they just scale down your model, blow up your region, get that shit popping and hot, then it goes national automatically because people want to know. You know, they want to get out there. Like, you know, this kid named Nelly, when he came out, right, he was from St. Louis. And there was really no hip-hop coming out of St. Louis. His whole flavor was St. Louis. And it was a curiosity national. You know what I mean? Like, what's the St. Louis sound thing, right? And then I created
right.
a whole audience, right? And what's the St. Louis thing? You know, and so it was like, you know, these local internets called hip-hop at that time frame. People were speaking the same thing with the L.A. You know, I mean, Death Row's a whole other story. But the whole thing about that was Solar Records, you know, Dick Griffey, Tennessee State, you know, cat that started, you know, put them even on Sounds of Los Angeles Radio, Solar Records, hooked up with Don Cornelius, put Shalimar and these brothers on. They were just about building out the L.A. sound, right? Chic and them. Now, that wasn't about bringing out the New York sound. Right, so I'm saying that every model you can look at in any range of business, you're regionally strong and tough. You know, Coach McLinda could recruit anywhere because he built Tennessee State out and get this, you know, the best track runner, you know, the Tiger Bell. So like, hey, I'm going to go to TSU. They got a great program. They got Olympic coaches. They got that national branding thing. Deion Sanders, again, he had that name, the pop, the swag, been out there, Hall of Fame football player, prominent, yeah. talkative, promoter. Showman, all that stuff. He's got, you know, the appeal to many audiences there. That's what's drawing it in. And then he's trying to build it out locally. You know, it's a work in progress. But the thing is, you know, when you start talking about DC, everything the brothers say is true. But what I'm seeing is I don't see no strength regionally in terms of the business plan.
Not even like the SWAC in and of itself.
Don't know enough about it. I mean, you guys been, you know, I've learned more from listening to you and Patrick this evening about, you know, what's been taking place in these different games than I've known in the past, but it's not reaching my doorstep, and I'm highly informed about stuff, right? That's my point. So the thing is, there's people out here who hear this, and it's like, oh, yeah, you know, it's like this HBCU thing, you know, this new stuff, you know, guys are wearing jackets and showing up and claiming their pride, this and that. It's still a niche. But to get it grounded to you, say, with the Pac-10, the Pac-12, and all that type of level thing, the exposure matters, true, and all those other things in the historical matters, true, but you really got to build out that branding really strongly, and that's what Sanders is doing in Jackson State. He understands how to try to brand this thing to keep this visibility, to stay promises, be a face, be a talkative type of a person, but right now, you know, I mean, to your point, T-Mac, it's like there's probably those only sports fans that probably can name five Pac-10 coaches, Big Ten coaches, where they can name five HBCU coaches, all of them combined.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So I think for the most part.
I'm with you. You
for
know,
the most
but
part.
It's a work.
It's a work in progress, no doubt. But for the most part, Tony, would you say that they passed in how to try to promote, how to work the crowd, how to get people interested, how to reignite the interest so that next year there's a game that's worth looking forward to coming to?
Oh, I think. 34. Actually, on the surface, to me, it looked like it was more than 35. But as Patrick was saying, it looked like it was more of a 35 were inside, and maybe another 5,000 or 6,000 were outside. You know,
okay.
on the grill and everything else. And that's cool. You know, it's you'd like to be able to, you know, fill the place up as well. But see, that game in and of itself. Has you know, the history involved in. I know in this entity of it, this was the first year. But when you look at the total history of that of having, you know, the official name of it now is the New York Football Classic. But we've known it for so many different things. You know, the Urban League Classic, the Whitney M. Young Classic. It's basically, for lack of a better word, I guess this is like sort of like the great grand nephew. Of the two previous ones,
and now they're venturing out after being stagnant for at least 5 to 6, 7 years or so, might be even longer than that. I think it was a very good opening act, and I think if nothing else, it's one, you know, it's, I think it's left a lot of people wanting more. And yes, you know, Howard had a big contingent, but there was a huge, huge Morehouse contingent as well. And you saw different, you know, you saw different, you know, you didn't, it wasn't just Howard, Shaw Howard jackets and Howard shirts and Morehouse shirts and Howard. You saw, I saw Fort Valley. I saw Winston. I saw A&T. I saw, you know, the colors of the HBCU rainbow. And to me, that, you know, the fact that we were able to do that in a small, in basically a small venue, and they could have done a little better promoting it, I think. But again, I think a lot of that is just, you know, growing pain, so to speak. But I'm, you know, and you know, I try not to be overly hyped about it or over the hype, but I try to, you know, talk about it on its, for what it is. And I do think that I would not be surprised, you know, with the way things are going over the next few years. Eventually, I think that's going to be a thing where you're going to see 50, maybe 60,000 at the Meadowlands. And a lot of it is going to be depending on who they bring to New York, and most importantly, who's going to want to bring it, because I'd be willing to bet that there were some schools that they approached that said, "Nah, we don't want to do that." But I think now, seeing the success that they had, now their minds may be changed a little bit.
I agree. I remember the year that the classic was up, and there's no more Grambling, there's no Morgan State. They had Hampton. And like, Hampton? What about Hampton? Hampton put 50,000 people in the house, and that you can't buy. The promotion that was done to get them to the point that 50,000 people would be in the house for Hampton was like night and day. That's the Hampton. It's like they have to re-promote all over again. Make sure that thing hits a watermark that doesn't deviate from dropping off, because the Subway alumni that spurred many of the HBCUs is a very real thing. But it's got to be consistent, and you can't have it. You don't have everybody working at it.
True that. And well, when you look at the bowl system, right, in the many bowls out there, there's some schools that just don't travel well.
Absolutely.
So you'll have an Arizona bowl, and if Arizona State or around someone regionally, they'll put them there because it's regional, right, so they can get traffic.
That's what I'm thinking,
Then there's some schools that travel well no matter what. You know, Michigan can fit in 150K. So oftentimes when bowls want to make money, it's not like a logical matchup. Like, why is the 19th team in the nation playing the number 5 team when there's other teams that are more sexier matchup, you know, one loss record-wise? That's what happens with the Cincinnati's and these other schools. They can't match the SEC travel crowds. They can't match the Big Ten travel crowds. They can't match the ACC travel crowds. For many years, Miami does not sell at the Orange Bowl, right? Even in their best teams, even with some of their greatest teams, you know?
Yep.
And so, right, because they're, you know, a private school. Same thing in basketball, right? You know, if you want more regional games, you know, Temple may be more likely to stay where they may get a regional game in Philly because they can travel well, right, as opposed to the people are not coming out to a regional game in Washington. So, again, you know, understanding logistics
and
regional.
And, Eric, to me, that's why all of this conference maneuvering makes no sense, because especially with college sports, it's regional. It's, you know, Michigan, Ohio State works because of, you know,
Because of
always,
region.
Yeah, always. Toledo, like that MAC conference, right? That MAC conference.
Yeah.
Like the MAC conference. I mean, MAC conference football and hoop is pretty good.
It is.
Like, you know, Akron versus Toledo or something like that. Cleveland State versus, you know, Eastern Michigan, what have you. You know, Michigan State. You know, we know the right there, Tobacco Road. You know, it's just on and on. I mean, so the thing is, if we have the visions of sugar plums dancing in one pair, that's cool. I mean, they have to have the big vision, and that's cool too as well. You know, it's like Vanderbilt. They don't travel well. They're not going to get that off-bid bowl unless it's going to be the Nashville Bowl. Oh, guess what? Vanderbilt's in the Nashville Bowl. They're right there, so they can attract. We see that they're right there physically because some schools don't travel. Texas travels well, University of Texas, right? So they'll bring them. LSU, when they played that national championship game not too long ago that they won, LSU, a few years ago. I can't remember. But But it was played at the Superdome. That was a home game for them.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, it was a home game. And the thing is that those areas, you got to speak to your strength. You know, I mean, I'm not going to try to sell gumbo in Minnetonka, Minnesota. You know what I mean? I probably might get more sales, you know what I mean, in Baton Rouge.
Sure.
You know, I probably may get more sales. Certain things don't even sell. Like California makes vehicles because of the sunshine, the air, that a certain color. There's certain colors of vehicles that only get sold in California.
Sure.
They don't sell nowhere else like they sell in California. You know what I mean? So you look at what wins here. What wins with business? What are the successes are? Right, and then that's where you can do this. So when UCLA, you know, wouldn't turn it out, he could recruit nationally, right? You know, he could bring Kareem Luau Cinder out from New York to L.A. I mean, well, how damaging would he have been if he played at St. John's, which was one of his thoughts.
Right.
That was not Westwood. That was not the beaches. You know, that was not the historicals of the other brothers that came before them. So those things matter. So I think the HBCU, knowing what we know about the historicals and all those great things like that. And the exposure has definitely increased. These dialogues are beautiful and helpful. We know we've got a wide swath and brand audience, but at the same time, we're not going to sit here and play pipe dreams and be Bobo the Fool about shit when you know that you can just kind of build out your strengths regionally. I mean, there are southern eateries. Like, I can't, you know, when I go down south, I can't get certain of these drive-through places like in Atlanta and sell fish and shit. They're not even the West Coast, man. You know what I mean? They ain't out here, man. You know, I hit the South. I'm like, shit, this is a drive-through? I mean, they serving it up like this? There ain't no Waffle Houses in Sacramento, man. And, you know,
no Biscuitvilles, no Pojanes.
All those places, man. And but those businesses aren't even thinking about expansion yet until they get enough growth in their franchise there. Now with the market, like you said, the YouTubes and the marketing and all these different channels, people say, oh, what's that? These TikToks, all that bullshit that people watch over time. Now it's more of a national exposure. So, yeah, I mean, it can get to these lanes and these areas. It's just like you said, you know, getting these guys to stop thinking in the 60s. Establish your strength where you're local. Establish your strength where you are. Like Jackson and Southern, you know, I mean, we watch the HBCU games in the bands. It's such a tradition that people know how to do certain cheers and stand when the bands come up, right, or how that's going to be played out, right? And it's very unique to other schools who have no clue to that. Like you were talking about Dot and I earlier. Yeah, that Dot and I, Ohio. That shit can't compete to some of these SBU, man. But NFL, not even close. The NFL first Super Bowl, I think Grambling was the halftime show.
I remember watching the mouse, and there was a black guy on top of that. I can't remember who it was. Wisconsin has the best
that has the best college band in the world, and I literally wanted to drive to this guy's house and say, and choke the life out of him for saying that. And again, no disrespect to Wisconsin. They got a nice little band, but, you know, come with me. I basically want to say, come with me. Come with me to Louisiana. Come to Louisiana to Tallahassee. Come with me to, you know.
Yeah, Nick Cannon's movie Drumline, you know, did more for amping up bands that call themselves other than black than anything else, because they had no clue 90% of stuff even went down like that. Mm-hmm. That some of us have decades of knowing this, right? I mean, the NFL rolled out Grambling. I think for many years too, the Macy's Day Parade used to roll up HBCU bands, right?
The Grambling Band was one of the. I think the Grambling Band was at the first five or six Super Bowls, didn't it?
Exactly. I mean, they knew where the bread was butter. I mean, TSU band did. I think one of the NFL Hall of Fame games recently. But all not just them. I mean, I just had the familiarity. But there's other schools too as well. Right? I mean, like I said, Nick Cannon's Drumline movie, you know, it was cute, flick. You know what I mean? That wasn't overwhelming and shit, but that jumped off everything that happened for him later.
The crazy thing is, for a lot of black, the sad thing, Eric, for a lot of black folks, that was their first indoctrination to HBCU.
That's right, exactly. But the thing that I liked most was the aspect that the HBCU bands picked up on one aspect that nobody could get anywhere else. And I remember in the 70s, the Shaft came out, and everybody and their mama was doing the theme from Shaft.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe it was 100.
Mm-hmm.
It was halftime.
Mike, that was not now, because we were joking about this on Saturday. You haven't, you know, it's not a real HBCU game unless one of the bands is playing neck. Basically, so
that's right.
Shaft was basically the neck of its generation for folks who need the understanding of it.
I remember
this movie. This movie in the 60s or 70s. I mean, I ran across this shit recently, man, on Amazon Prime for anyone who wants to watch it or get. Charlton Heston played this New Orleans Saints quarterback called the one.
Number one.
Yeah. Cool little joint. And the halftime show was Grambling again. Another HBCU band was tearing this shit up in the movie on the celluloid. So they right. They were right there in that flick. I said, okay. I mean, so that knowingness and that impact is there. How do you consolidate and piecemeal all that together? I mean, if you even just did a battle of the bands or whatever the fuck you want to call it in 2023 and invite all the HBCUs to do something like that just to show you that kind of talent level there and what happens here in the city, that's going to jump up, you know, interest. I mean, people need to know about Jay Gaither and all the historicals.
Absolutely.
And right now in New York City, right, I'm not there. You know, I know I can get the Yankee Channel out here, but, yeah, you know, I'm cool on that, right, because all the services. But, I mean, a young person growing up in the tri-state area today, do they know who Lou Gehrig is?
Probably. Maybe.
They know. If you're gonna watch that Yankee, if you're gonna watch that Yankee Channel, go to the Yankee Channel, you're gonna get bombarded with the historicals.
Mm-hmm.
They do not ever let that rest. Yankee fans know that history. At 12-13, right? It doesn't start with Derek Jeter for them.
Mm-hmm. First, to ask about that, Gary. You've been in this for years. We saw the potential at the HBCU of the Whitney Young Classic. You saw it come and go. Now it's back. How do you feel about the potential to see an HBCU game on your home turf?
Well, I saw Southern out here at San Jose State. I saw Grambling out in California at Berkeley. And what amazed me more than anything else is that every school, every HBCU school was at Berkeley and was at San Jose.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty great. I think everybody on this thread here has probably seen Grambling or the band live at some point. So in a sense, Grambling. Maybe Morgan State also as well on the national record, but I think everybody, but Grambling has clearly been the bell cow over the years. And I think they ain't King Kong ain't got you know what on them. I got you. But it's one of those things where I think as things can go on, you would want to see what you will want to see. I guess again, it may not happen today or tomorrow, but I think with the way things are now with the internet and the other non-traditional ways of communication, I think they can have the regional thing, but also dip their toes into the national as well.
Everything's national these days, right? I mean, because you can stream it from anywhere, right? So it's always national access anytime you want to do it, right? So I can watch HBCU games from anywhere I want regionally because it depends on how you want to get it to you. You always have access, right? That's a non-issue. The key is, attendance and building the interest and things in that area there, because – broadcasters, if the stands are 80% empty and they do a scan of the arena or wherever it may be and it's ghost town, you see that in the NFL, right, or the NBA, right, where they just cloak things, like Mount Davis when he had that extra level built in Oakland.
Yeah.
They have that thing covered, So in other words, the NBA does the same. They'll start covering or they'll start using a spotlight on the court only and shadowing the rest of the arena so you can see that the interest is the arena's not 45% filled.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what Texas Southern and Southern should have done this past weekend.
Exactly. You got to learn how to cloak that shit, or have the scans because, if it looks like there's no local interest, then it's going to be very little national interest. People, the crowd is going, well, how many times these announcers say that? There's a buzz in the building.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, I think I've seen Grambling and Southern over a dozen times going at each other. But, just – The one conference I haven't seen a lot of actually is the SIEC because they play down in Florida, South Georgia, and over near the Mississippi River. But, when it comes to the CIAA and MEAC, I think I've seen just about every school that plays football.
Right.
And, one of the things that irks me with the whole system right now is we've had too many people in leadership who did not value the product they put on the field. And then, in a lot of cases, a few dollars more would have helped a whole lot. Whether it was keeping a good coach, getting a good supporting staff, to coach with him. Because it's interesting that people who run the if you're truly a good manager, president or chancellor, one of the things you go after is a quality supporting staff because you're not going to try to do it all yourself. As brilliant as you may think you are, you're only so smart. And when I say so smart, part of that has to do with how far can you get on your own? How far can you go with your own two hands? You've got to have these additional hands. And sometimes, I know president right now could very well go down because of his supporting staff. By the same token, I know several presidents and chancellors right now. The only reason they stay afloat is their supporting staff, and they let them do what they're there to do. I.e., if you're there to be an athletic director. You're not doing direct athletics. Do what you do. Keep them informed. But, it's a business. And you got to do things in a business-like manner. If you don't, the next thing you know, you're out of business. I.e.,
absolutely.
You know, you got to coach, you know, like a certain school I won't name, but it's interesting that the two schools in the triad area, both of them got coaches that need to be fired. They're what, three games in, they're each 3-0-3. That's not how we play. But see, you gotta have people at the top who can make the decision, and sometimes it's the right decision to let others do and make the decision for you. And that's one of the things that's been missing. And then they see other people out there doing what they're doing, and they say, well, why can't we have that? Well, we can't have that if we don't do what they did.
If you see your coach as a revenue driver, I mean, then you may have an idea, because I can remember on the prep level, a principal telling me that, you know, because there was a principal there, and he said, you know, more people are going to know you in town than they know the principal. Same thing in sports. Who knows these school presidents? We know Saban, right? We know Deion, right? You know, we know, you know, Izzo. But who's the school president of these institutions? They don't come up, right? So you have to reduce your ego and be humble and be able to kind of put the best people forward in front of you. And even all the brothers who laid it down, you know, in the HBCU coaching legends, they had university presidents who hired them and supported them who seen the bigger picture. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Understanding that, you know, how to put these people in place to build out your product level. You're still running the show. You're the chancellor, the president, whatever you want to call yourself. But these coaches, the first thing, too, to say that sports is also part of the academic process. It's a learning tool.
Yeah.
What it is.
Here's a thing that I think people should understand. One of the reasons why Grambling was able to do what they were able to do, one, you know, you had a legendary coach, of course. Two,
of course.
You had an SID who was long before his time. He was, you know, he was an innovator long before some of the stuff that we see now. And you had an AD who shared the same vision as those two men. Now, here's the thing. Who was the president during that period of time?
That's
my point, Mike. It doesn't matter who the president is.
Yeah.
He was smart enough to realize, let me let these guys do what they do.
Stay out of their way. Stay out of their way. Support them.
In so many instances, with a lot of these schools, like you said, you know, these presidents or these, you know,
arrogant pushers,
they want to be, you know, they want to be on the cover of the media
street,
guys,
yeah,
so to speak,
street,
or what have you.
Yeah.
And then they actually would get jealous if by some stretch that the SID or the head, or God forbid, the head coach is more popular than them. Really?
No shit.
Which will always be the case.
Exactly.
Which will it's set up that way because the media coverage is not showing up at the Board of Trustees meeting, right?
Exactly.
You know, and that's what takes place. And then we know it can corrupt. We know what happened at Penn State when it just fucking got chaotic corrupt. Right. But my point being is how that coach, if you get them that many years there, that's what can take place. And we've seen that. We talked about, a few years back, maybe 2 years ago. It had to probably be 2 years ago. You know, we talked about Herm Edwards. I was like, Herm's not going to last, you know, because he, you know, all kinds of violations. They went 1-2. They clipped him, right? He's done. But the point of the matter, it goes back to what Fred says. You have to make those decisions fast. I remember when, who was it, Kiffin? He got blown out by somebody, and Pat Hayden fired him before he got on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or Mike Garrett fires another body, Sarkisian, before he got on the bus, you know, after a tough loss, because they depend on athletics for these revenue streams. Huge revenue streams. And that's what Saban and the amount of revenue he brings to Alabama, you know what I mean, university,
whatever they pay them is nothing of what they're getting from the revenue stream, attendance wise, and everything else. And that's why Patrick Ewing to this day had a crap year, right? Is he still the head coach of Georgetown last I checked, right?
Exactly. You know, here in Connecticut, for the longest time, the number one and number two most paid state employees was Gina Auriemma.
Yes, Gina.
And it's funny because you had some media folks here that actually, you know, went after them because of the money that they made. And Calhoun was saying, look, you know, I get paid for results, but also, you know, I helped bring that new library in. I also helped.
Dormitories,
exactly.
Endowments, all that stuff.
Exactly.
I mean,
exactly.
Pat Summitt, when she was at Tennessee, was the highest paid coach on that campus.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Absolutely. And so the thing is, you know, these coaches, what's interesting, right, because the ADs and the presidents can get a stadium named after them and shit. So why trip, right? Why trip on this? You know, just let the thing build out, you know what I mean? And so you've seen that with Tarkanian. I mean, Tark was Tark. You know what I mean? I mean, you know, Tarkanian was, you know, associated with a lot of different things. I mean, he took, you know, Sweet Pea Lloyd Daniels in there who couldn't even read, literally,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, literally. And then, but Tark, you know, he understood the kind of system and the undercut. And he was a little different because once he took that San Antonio job, who did he bring on? Lloyd Daniels. Sweet Pea. Right? Put him on the team. And he ended up getting like a 10-year career.
The Missouri Valley Conference. I looked it up. They lost 32 schools in the history of Missouri Valley. 32 schools have moved out of the valley.
Wow.
Guess what? Two more schools.
It's a big shuffleboard, man. You're going to kind of, the maneuvers for traditionalists who like to, you know, have these conference names, right? Like, what was the conference? Like, the Big East football was a joke, right? You know, when Miami and them first joined that conference.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, Miami bailed on that. I mean, you know, a lot of, since the Big East basketball conference really had it together, and that's all been splintered. You know, Connecticut's in what, the USAA or something like that, USA Conference or something like that.
They're back in the Big East now.
It's one big shuffleboard. So typically in the Big East days, in the Pac 8 days, in the Big 10 days, it was literally 10 schools. SEC's in the Big, what's it, the Big 12. Was it the Big 8 back then with SMU and all those schools? Like that? I can't recall.
It was the Southwest Conference.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, I mean, you can shuffle these things ad nauseum, you know, change the conferences, move and maneuver, but they want to get regionally strong and tap into the base. So Urban Meyer weighed in on the USC-UCLA draw. You know, coming into the Big Ten,
you know, crazy.
He jumped in on that. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, it's not a fun travel, but you know, it really benefits a school like Michigan that can now get some recruits in. You know, hey, Illinois, get some Cali kids. We come to your state twice. Your parents can see you play. You know what I mean? So it just kind of links into the talent pool in terms of the recruiting business.
But if you pay them enough money, they're going to bail. You know, so they got the money. They can't, you know, frown on that, and off they go. It'll be a little experiment for them. But they'll continue to shuffle these conferences all day long because they're not even relevant.
They're not even relevant.
These conferences are just like a joke play, man, because, well, we have Memphis Grizzlies. Back to conference stuff real quickly. They're in the what? Tennessee. They play in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they play in the Western Conference. New Orleans plays in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Right?
Notre Dame plays in ACC, west of the Mississippi River.
Yeah. Literally. So they're traveling to Portland. They're traveling to SAC. You know, San Francisco played the Warriors, L.A. Well, wouldn't it make more regional sense if they played Atlanta, Cleveland? They're on that seaboard. Shorter flights, shorter distances. So these conferences, they draw them up the way they want to. So I don't really lock into the conference stuff too much. It's because it's one big shuffleboard, one big skullduggery, one big crappish manifestus. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Because they'll always fill these conference teams out. Who cares? You know, it's like, what, the Big 12, they added Cincinnati, Houston, and I forgot the third school to replace, you know, the schools that are leaving. That makes a little sense there, right? Because Houston gets more profile. So the Pac-12's got to pick up two schools. Is that San Diego State? Is that BYU? Fresno State? Who's that? So those smaller schools kind of benefit. It just goes on and on and on and on. Man, the game don't stop, man. The hustle never ends.
But if I'm USC or UCLA, I'm not going to Rutgers, New Jersey in the middle of winter. Are you going to be
there? Well, they are.
They won't be in another couple of years.
Yeah, they sure will be. I mean, they sure will. I mean, Penn State, you know, all those places. Maryland, yeah, they're in that conference, right? Maryland in that conference. So,
they're in the Big Ten.
Yeah, they're Big Ten now, right? I mean, you know, and then where does Vanderbilt ever eat in that conference? If anyone wants to jump to the Big 12, Vanderbilt should be trying to flee out of the SEC. They're never going to come up.
They got $55 million last year. They ain't going nowhere.
And that's my point. So they'll take those L's all day long, right?
So see, one of the things those schools look at, okay, you know, the HBCUs are worried about the cost of traveling. Well, part of the cost of traveling with them is by bus.
Oh, it's all bus. Yeah.
But those other schools, because remember, Bobby Knight had access to two private jets that he flew on. Same thing with a lot of these other schools. They got these mid-sized.
All of them do, jets. For the most part. Yeah, all
and,
of them.
And their pilots leave to warm up the planes an hour after the game is over. In another hour, they finish eating. They load up on the bus from the bus that takes them to the airport, and they're out of there.
All day.
They either sleep in their own beds that night, or depending on where they're going, they sleep in the next game site. Either way, they fly.
Yeah, they're not stuffed with long legs and a bus and stuff. I mean, Oklahoma State, right? You know, I mean, back to Eddie said they had their own planes. I think they had a little turbulence in the air with that group too, right? And so they have certain distinct flight patterns and flight plans. The NBA, these professional sports teams take great caution on flight patterns and the way they do their schedule. They never leak that because that comes to mind. That's where this MFer was tripping. Sam Vincent, when he was the head coach of Charlotte, or the Bobcats or whatever they were called at the time, he rerouted the plane. He got clipped the moment they landed. You know what I mean? The moment they landed, he decided to take the alternative route and shit. You know what I mean? Like, whoa, dude. What the fuck? I mean, and then, you know, and every NBA player, professional athlete's got some turbulent stories. So when you start thinking about these things, you have to consider those possibilities as well, weather systems,
you know, and all these different things like that. That in itself can wear a player out, solar radiation in these planes, less pilots out there giving up their gigs and shit. There's a lot going on in the air. So when you take these things along, you're a lot, man. You know, people in the flight industry, I know pilots and all that tell me all kinds of shit, like, you know, stories of luxury flights. So when you start looking at the logistics, I agree. I mean, if I'm a West Coast coach, trust me, I'm not trying to play Penn State and Rutgers back-to-back in hoop, you know, in icy conditions, and then head back to Cali, and so then we got to get ready for Arizona or something like that. No, they're not in the Pac-12. So then Michigan comes in, Illinois comes in. Those schools in those regions, they're used to those inclement weather environments. That's just how they're built. They do it 24/7. They can't wait to come to USC and UCLA and get some of that sun after being in that ice zone. So it is what it is, but it's a money game, it's a money pool. But, you know, I can't see these – if these ADs are in that thing long-term with the travel components, because they're not doing the travel, the athletes are, it's going to change the game. So you have soccer games with women that I think some of them play in inclement weather, right? They play fall time, you know what I mean, or whatever. You know, or these gymnastic teams, because the Big Ten is really strong gymnastics, so does SC and UCLA. They got to get on the road.
Yeah, my niece plays volleyball at Temple, and they fly.
Yeah.
I mean, because was it last year? And I'm not sure what their schedule is this year, but I'm supposed to be watching, but I'm not. But anyway, they flew down to Texas, and they flew over to somewhere in Louisiana. They flew to the University of Houston, some school in Louisiana, but it wasn't LSU. And then there was three games on that, well, two games in a tournament on that trip. But at any rate, you know, they just—that's just how they do. They don't worry about buses, except from the plane to the door of the arena, then back to the plane, the arena, back to the plane, and they're out of there. Because the plane that they fly on carries like 35 people.
Well, HBCU basketball. Yes,
from the plane to the door to the arena, the distance should be added to that player's account when that player's a scrub or a star. They should be given those miles as incentive, as perks for being able to see the big picture. Yeah, I can fly home because I got 3 miles.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to do that.
Yeah,
I don't know if they're going to do that.
Right. It's kind of interesting because when the HBCU is going that basketball killer tour, right, they're playing friggin', I mean, I forgot the college, but they were at Washington State, then they were at Indiana, then they went to Arizona, you know, that money tour, you know, the get paid tour for the school.
I think it was Mike Davis
State
at A&M. I think
this was pretty recent, right? I forget. I mean, it could have been somewhere. I can't recall, man. It could have been a school in Georgia. I don't know. So I don't know why Savannah State comes to mind. I don't think it was them. But when they went out to play, you know, Pac-12 schools like Washington State, then they played Indiana. They're like crisscrossing the country. They flew, but they had that advance money for taking that butt-looking tour. So the players go, yeah, we enjoy playing these teams, but it wears us out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we're like landing and flying.
Not even NBA teams have that kind of a schedule.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It's real short. Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. yes. And they're good for it, like a quarter and a half, really competitive. But, you know, it's a little different weight rooms. It's a little different training systems between these two universities. You know, a little different conditioning programs between each university.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see it's like when Reggie sees. And I know Reggie pretty well. Dealt with the
basketball. Reggie, right?
So, I mean, he was. He played. I think he went up to Seton Hall.
They played well first half.
They did. I mean, they were really competitive. We talked to him a little bit about that. Reggie's wild, but the thing is that
who they were playing, how they were jumping around, man, it was inexhaustible. You know what I mean? I mean, they took that schedule on, but you can't go a two full half college
right.
basketball style.
Yeah. And they have another one up next year. They're bringing in Morgan State, Bell State, and somebody else in December 3rd up here. They announced it on Saturday.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I see the Seton Hall game, and there was other, you know, that they played some other D1, you know, official D1 type schools. And, you know, the refs not giving them no love. They just don't have the size. Don't have the athletes per se. They got all the heart in the world. You know, they got the coaching that can match a little bit. But, you know, the Johnnies and Joes just don't match up long term,
mm-hmm.
you know, over the course
mm-hmm.
of time. And but the play that killer schedule, you know, it's like really rough on the time. You know, it's just really tough to do. Now, the players got to get up and play, you know, each game and try to get rushed in. And they depend on themselves. But to try to coach that, that's stressful as hell.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Before we get to the field, generals, gentlemen, Patrick, you get the last word on this. Is this something that we're going to see next year? Yes. Do we have something to look forward to? Can they market this into something profitable?
You know, all they got to do, like I said, I told Helen's just, they need to get some black folks involved in this bad boy, who understand the HBCU market, to push them a little bit, just to invade some spaces. Because when you don't have Amsterdam News giving the ad, they had BLS and Hot 97 on some boards, but and they brought them over from Hot 97 to the game, you know, for inside the broadcast of the Peacock Network. But you got to do more than that. That's all. And they got the people who can do it. There are people, folks around there that can do it. Just reach out. If you don't know, just reach out to some folks.
Okay. I agree.
I said, if we don't nobody, call me, and I can tell you who you should go see. But as much as they pay you, that's going to be limited because you got to give me some money. That's
nothing. There you go. Gentlemen, the field generals are undergoing some wild situations. We've seen some of the best work done early on by them. You've seen some surprising things done to them. However, there's one issue that unfortunately involves those damn analytics, which I'm not fond of. Baseball did this shit years ago, and I'm annoyed at the fact that, all right, you face 27 men up once, up down, through the lineups. That's a perfect game. Okay. That's a standard. Football is a whole different animal. And a few weeks ago, a few years ago, we should say, they developed a number that was supposed to be 168.3, whatever the hell that was. That's a perfect game. You pitched a perfect game, and you won. Well, my question is, what happens when you lose?
Mm-hmm.
I quote Lamar Jackson, because Lamar Jackson was unreal against the Miami Dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
So was Tua Tagovailoa. Ironically, in the last seconds, Miami pulls the game out. But Jackson threw a perfect game. So how do you beat perfection? And you know the white writers jumped all over this shit. But
damn, so dude.
How do we allow this to affect, mal-affect efforts done by the field generals?
Well, put it this way. Contrary to popular belief, numbers do lie. They lie like dogs.
All the time.
Something like that. Look, again, it's strictly numbers. If everything's all about numbers, then let's just get folks out there with abacuses and tiddlywinks and don't put the players out there if it's all about numbers. If, you know, I don't need to see a number to let me know that that Tua and Lamar had a hell of, you know, had a hell of a duel on Sunday.
Yep.
You know, I don't need, I don't need to have somebody with a calculator to tell me that Kyler Murray is a great player. You know,
yeah,
what he was able to do against the Raiders. Sorry, Dan. That so. No, I don't need a number to tell me. The thing that the NFL and all these other pseudo intellectuals forget is that the game is still played by players. It's still played by whatever. You know, the Jets Browns game. What was it? Mm-hmm. The last 2 minutes, the Browns, you know, and again, sorry, Patrick, I'm not trying
minute
to do it.
Minute 55, 10:33,
yeah.
Mighty Black. Yeah.
What do you think about it? Now,
yeah.
When they were up, I guess, by 13 with so many seconds left, they had, you know, 90% of, you know, 95 and 100% of the push that they were going to win. Meanwhile, a blown coverage here. An onside kick there, and all of a sudden, it's like, what the hell just happened? You know, put it this way. I'll say it before and I'll say it again. When you're watching the field generals, if you incorporate all things that aren't football, you can't. Then I'm not listening to you. Because at the end of the day, it is still about football. Now, the very same folks who tried to say that Mahomes was not going to be the same quarterback because Mr. Hill left, obviously don't know nothing about football and obviously don't know anything about Mahomes because all he's done is just, okay, I'll just incorporate the folks that are here.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Then, and it doesn't help, and it doesn't have, and Mike, it doesn't help when you have brain dead coaches, i.e., in Denver, that would rather go for a 64 field goal as opposed to going for 4th and 5 to try to win the damn game.
That speaks to something even worse. But you get the idea. Now that the field generals have exhibited this kind of excellence, it's a whole other aspect that I have to look at. It's like, are you one play better than your opponent? When my Eagles beat the Putty Tats week one, they ran for a shitload of yards. They ran for a shitload of yards.
Let's go, Gary.
But when it came time to hold it down, they had the ball last with 35 seconds. Victory formation, and that's that. Patrick Mahomes made 3 throws in his victory against Los Angeles. One was a touchdown pass to a tight end. Nobody else could have made that throw. But I won't say that. I'll say it has been very hard to find somebody to be able to make that throw. And when the game was over, Patrick Mahomes was one play better than the opposition. That's what the field generals are going to have to show. There's going to be a no doubt about this aspect to everything that they do. And even though Lamar Jackson lost, he made everybody understand that, all right, if you're going to play, you're going to play to the end whistle. Get 2 attack of your lower credit. You did just that. And because of that, Miami won. But it wasn't because Lamar Jackson wasn't good. And it wasn't because Lamar Jackson didn't want to win.
Absolutely. You know, and see, it's I want to focus on Murray because, you know, we all know during the off season that basically him and Cliff Kingsbury had a power struggle. And King, as far as I'm concerned, Kingsbury basically tried to get this kid traded. And when he found out he couldn't, he figured he would scandalize his name by, you know, playing into the old thing, the old black quarterback theory that, oh, well, he don't watch enough film. Oh, well, he ain't committed to the game and all this other stuff.
He drink too much Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. Now, mind you, Cliff Kingsbury hasn't had a winning record in either college or the pros, mind you.
Thank you.
But he's up there trying to recite gospel and verse. But see, again, we talked about this the other night, Mike. The thing that I love about the especially the black quarterbacks, it reminds me of jazz.
True that.
Jazz is the most improvisational music of all. You can't go to school and learn what Charlie Parker does. You can't look up what W.C. Handy and Diz and all the other guys did. Now, but see, again, here's where the things are hasn't changed in over the years. They will tell you that, you know, Charlie's okay and Diz is okay and that's okay, but Artie Shaw and Benny Goodman, those guys are jazz connoisseurs and what have you. And it's the same.
White guys used to go listen to black guys play.
Exactly. And just
wondering.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Absolutely. It's the crazy thing. Now, the crazy thing is Tom Brady can't do what Tua can do.
Got that right.
Joe Burrow can't do what Patrick Mahomes does. And, you know, for all you Buffalo fans that are ready to get your tickets ready for the Super Bowl two games into a 18-week season, come see me in December, okay?
Come see me
in December. That's all I'm saying. They're playing great now, but
put it this way.
The way the NFL is now, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Yeah. Not that 16 games in 17 weeks was ever a lesser of a marathon, but it's even more of a marathon of attrition now than anything else. But again, Kyler Murray could watch all sorts of film, but you can't teach what Kyler Murray was able to do in
you
that fourth quarter.
Right.
You can't teach
and,
what
and overtime, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't teach what Lamar and Tua was doing back and forth on Sunday.
You can't teach what Tyrod Taylor did either on Sunday.
Exactly. Mahomes has won a Super Bowl. He's winning MVP. He's been, and his peers have voted him, you know, the best player in the game. But they will try to tell you, he ain't all that. He ain't all that. Okay.
That's always the story, though.
Yeah.
That's always going to be the story, you know. Ali couldn't fight, you know. Ali couldn't throw an uppercut. Yeah, poor defense.
Jim Brown couldn't block.
Ali doesn't know how to, you know, block with his arm guard. You know, he's all flip and miss. He's all reflexes, right? You know, things of that sort. You know, I mean, it's always going to be that kind of language. You know, LeBron, you know, is about to become the NBA's leading scorer. They're trying to figure out is he one of the best of all time? You know, just on and on it goes. But that's just the sports talk. We don't trip on that because we know our own and we know how we get down. But, you know, I mean, but Tagalope, I mean, 4 TD passes in the fourth quarter. I didn't see Lamar Jackson playing DB.
There you go.
They refused to talk about the defense at that fourth quarter.
That's one of Harbaugh.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, personnel. I mean, whenever personnel puts up 35, personnel did their job. It comes down to coach. He got out coached by that cat in Miami.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, he rallied them dudes, man. That guy out coached him. I mean, he saw that dude that got hired. You know, he was a good coordinator with the Niners, man. That cat can coach. You know, and he's proven it early on. You know, I mean, he went into Baltimore and didn't take it. You know, he rallied that squad. So that means, guess what? They're listening to him. They're not laying down on him. They're not quitting on him.
Absolutely.
You know, and then Trey Lance, you know, unfortunately got damaged up.
Yeah.
It's one thing to watch a route. It's another thing to watch a game where quarterbacks and other players make plays because of the execution of running that play. The Tua, Lamar Jackson was a classic because it was about everybody made plays when they were supposed to make them.
And years ago, they would have hyped a Namath Unitas thing, right? Oh, look at Unitas trading and shit. There's no trade on Tagalova and Jackson gunning it out. You know, Tua can F and ball. Now, here's a fascinating thing since you brought up the field generals. And I was thinking about this when I watched, you know, Mike's Eagles, you know, the other night. Hurts and Tagalova was both under center at Alabama at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
You know what I mean? I mean, and, you know, then Hurts pushes to Oklahoma. He tore it up there. But Saban had both those cats.
Hurts, don't
at
it?
At the same time.
There you go. That's true. Gentlemen, we are grateful that you take the time to put some beautiful food into the pot. Again, I'm grateful for all the love we got as we try to kick COVID's ass and stuff. And it's time to take it to the last level and everybody get a little something on the way out. Reggie, I don't know where you are, but show your ass up when you get a chance. Patrick, thank you so much for coming in. Throw some love into the pot. Give us some wisdom on the way out. Patrick, are you there?
Well, it looks like he's there in spirit.
All right. While he's making a sandwich, Frank, come on in.
Well, first of all, as I was saying earlier, I got a chance to watch the script of Howell last weekend, I think it was. And one of the things I was wondering is who copied who, whether Dr. Foster had copied Ohio, or Ohio had copied Ohio had copied him. But either way, you know, that's one of the few fight bands I really pay that much attention to, because most of the rest of them don't march. They run and they play the same stuff all over and over and over. It's not all that good. But, you know, I don't watch that much of them, no way. So it just happened to be, there's a new sports channel in our area, and that was what was on. So I was coming through to get to that. But the other beautiful thing, as of about 1 o'clock today, I pushed the button, and they started putting my book. So the history of HBC women's basketball will be out and delivered in about a week. For whatever reason, a couple of companies don't work that much on Friday, so if it's not out by tomorrow, it'll come out. Be shipped on Monday. But anyway, it was a labor of love, and I'm working on another now, dealing with alumni. But you know, the good thing is we got a story to tell. We just got to tell it. We got to continue to tell it. You know, we were talking about the various classics and so forth. You know, I would pick Big House. I'd pick Coach Rob, Jake, you know, any of the top five coaches in men and women's basketball as well as football, against either of the top five coaches in men and women's basketball and as well as football from any white school from back in the day. One of the things I thought about when Carolina was playing FAMU, I said, in our lifetime, because most of us, I don't think any of us all that young, but in our lifetime, I could see Jake coming up to Chapel Hill and right from the floor with the Tar Heels. And wouldn't been nothing they could do about it. And there being, back in those days, there being without a play on the same field with the 100. But guess what? The 100 would still look good. You can reach me at on Facebook as well as blackheritagereview.com. Mike, get well soon. It's hard to hear you cussing. It's hard to hear you cussing when you don't have a voice.
Well, in terms of me cussing, I will keep that to the minimum next week, because next week Professor will elucidate on the whole concept of sports entertainment. Now, in our time as we built this thing, members of the group have and contributed to the overall lexicon of BASN. And sports entertainment covers a wide swath of things. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that since McMahon made that brutal mistake in thinking that wrestling fans were football fans, he didn't know that there was a distinct difference, and it cost them the XFL. But we'll discuss all that in depth later on as I get back to Patrick, you know, whether or not he had a sandwich time. Patrick, are you there? Patrick, are you there?
Thank you.
Jennifer, wake him up. All right. See in the middle of itis action stuff. We move on. Give me some merit. Give me some love.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, stay on the fast recovery to your health. Health over everything. So definitely, you know, keep that at the forefront, which I know you will. Robert Sarver, you know, Phoenix Suns.
Oh my,
Mercury. Mr. Robert Sarver. You know, I guess wherever Chris Paul goes, he finds an owner, you know, who has some negative comments about, you know, their leadership, you know. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I mean, so you have an owner on record dropping, you know, let's see what some people like to call it, the N-bomb, the N-word. And his head coach is, the N-word, and his prime players are full of N's, you know, and from his mindset. And now he's, you know, people are, oh, you know, the NBA was light with the fine, and the NBA was going to give him a year because, you know, hey, listen, the NBA is saying, like, you know, hey, we go to all these All-Star events, and the N-bomb is being dropped on every track we play over the loudspeaker.
Yeah.
At these events, right? So what are you guys talking about? Was basically their soft approach. And now Sarver has agreed to you know, sell the Phoenix team. He wouldn't have lasted or survived anyway. But again, new about, he's just someone that just was on record, you know, but what's new about that? It's been going on ad nauseum. And, you know, again, you know, fortunately this was done outside the season, so we didn't have to see teams turn on their jerseys backwards, right, when they come up for the layup line, right?
Or yeah,
not show their logo, but then when the ball is thrown up, we see the logo and everything else. And guess what? Nobody refused that Sterling paycheck, right? No one's going to refuse that the Sarver paycheck as well. Even though we know how he feels about his merchandise, probably in his mindset. So the National Basketball Association, again, exceedingly conflict of interest about what's taking place with their business model and everything else that goes on. Huge, huge inconsistencies of what they say that they represent. So all those signs we've seen, you know, during the bubble, right, you know, in racism and all these logo shirts, right, and prints on the floor. Robert Sarver was still owning.
Which had to be approved by the NBA, by the way.
Absolutely. Robert Sarver was an owner, an active owner during that time.
That's right.
You know, right? So, in essence, none of these guys play the game at a whole nother level, you know. And so now, again, he's going to be forced to sell his team, but will anyone of melanated descent be able to step up and have it? Or does the NBA already have their owner in place already so they can increase their value? He's going to pay some exorbitant amounts for the Phoenix Suns because they've been super successful the last 2 years. So as much as Sarver was caught on the record, he was basically X'd out by Mr. Adam Silver well before the process started. And now they're going to make a shift and change in that process in the ownership group. But if the ownership group is not picking up anyone of melanated descent or it's going to be a reasonable contender to buy the team, maybe they won't be able to because they're probably going to get outpriced. That Suns sale value is going to increase the league's coffers substantially because the Suns are going to be sold for exponential amount of money because their dollar has never been this high.
Wow. Sad but true.
Yeah,
this is definitely to be continued. Gary, run it down.
I congratulate my cousin, Chelsea Gray. No, I'm kidding. I got to congratulate the women's basketball team, being the first professional team in Nevada to win the first championship. I thought it would be the Raiders to be the first. The ladies.
Oh, my goodness.
So congratulations to.
Congrats.
The Aces for winning their first championship. I'm thinking to you, my cousin Chelsea Gray, doing it. Sarah McCove on Saturday may move into 7 o'clock because I'm going to see the Oakland A's and the Cubs.
There you go, special edition. That's cool.
Yeah, I think your cousin played in high school a lot, G. I think Chelsea played at St. Mary's when she was at St. Mary's. Yeah, she was throwing down, you know, because they played the regional championships in SAC, you know, ARCO, when it was called that.
And
they played my son's school at the time when Pam McGee, Saval's mother, was coaching SAC High, who's all-time favorite, Pam McGee. Shout out, Pam. What's up, Pam? Shout out to
Pam. All right,
Pam. You know.
and Gary, please stay near the bullpen, just in case. Just
oh, my goodness. Hey, G, you're going to be in there with 17 people.
What, is that again?
The A's game, it's going to be you and 18 other people.
Well, actually. You're going to get more people to the best series than the last three series combined.
Right. Just bring me back.
Transplanted New Yorkers, huh?
Bring me back a Dave Stewart jersey. I'll be happy.
There you go.
Tony.
Speaking of baseball in Cali, we lost another icon.
Yesterday, with
Maury Wills, and everybody knows about Ricky, everybody knows about Lou, everybody knows about Vince Coleman and Tim Raines and Kenny Lofton, but even Jackie Robinson to a certain extent, but you know
Maury Wills was probably, you know, the most underrated of the great base stealers.
Yes, he was.
You know, and see, the thing about him is that he probably wasn't as fast as Ricky. He probably wasn't as, say, what's the word I'm looking for? Maybe not as savvy as Lou Brock, but, you know, he had, you know, the thing about him was that he had the heart of knowing when to steal. You know, the 62 Dodgers don't even sniff a pennant without Maury Wills and his 104 steals that year. And the thing about with him was that everybody and their mama knew he was going to be stealing, and he still was able to do it. Matter of fact, the spirit of Wills, you know, is still there today in the sense with Dave Roberts, because very famously when he was serving as a roving instructor for the Dodgers. And Dave Roberts came up, and Wills basically told him, there's going to come a time in a key game where you're going to be put in, and everybody and their mama's going to know you're going to be stealing, and you still have to steal that base. And case in point, 2003 American League Championship Series, Red Sox are down to basically their last one or two outs, about to possibly get swept. And Dave Roberts is put in as a pinch runner. Everybody in Boston knows he's running. Everybody in New York knows he's running. And he still stole that base. And that was, you know, the living embodiment of what a Maury Wills, of the teachings of a Maury Wills and the influence of a Maury Wills. And it's too bad that, you know, unfortunately, the stolen base is now scorned in a sense in modern day baseball. But, you know, if nothing else, let's, you know, send a shout out and just, you know, a remembrance of who Maury Wills was and who Maury Wills will always be.
Much love,
Maury. Didn't he also manage T-Mac?
He managed, he's managed a semi-major league team. He managed those god-awful Seattle Mariners teams, pre-Griffey. So,
what Maury Wills did for me was, as a little boy in New Jersey, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, see, this is what baseball is losing.
Yeah.
I remember when I was younger, at 4 o'clock, we were the Dodgers and Giants. I could not wait to see Dodgers and Giants. For God. Baseball is losing that. And it is backwards.
Well, see, you can't, Gary, you can't do something that you're not trying to find. And that's one reason why baseball is gone backwards. The things that made it unique, they're killing it. Now, you would say a dunk has a certain mentality to it in terms of being an overall play. A stolen base had that same characteristic. If everybody knows you're going to steal and you can still steal in spite of it, you just told the world, screw you, I'm going to do this any old way. And the thing that's most important, I'm not afraid of you,
motherfucker. I ain't scared of you, motherfucker. I'm going to tell you something straight off the motherfucking press. I ain't coming for no foolishness. And New York, goddamn it, y'all motherfucking women look good. Y'all like a bigger egg sandwich look good. But I love sex. I love it. Can't do shit no more. And I'm blessed. I'm big boned. I'm heavy structured. I'm hung low. If I pull my shit out, this whole room get dark. You don't understand. I ain't scared of you, motherfucker. I love I love sex, man. I love it by the pound. I'd be glad when they put that shit in cans. Can you imagine sex in cans? Motherfuckers be shoplifting and shit. Folks be playing ball, man. Tell me what you get ready to do, man. I'm telling you, give me a 6-pack and put something going in. Kick it! You don't understand. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. Women just do anything till you talk to any kind of way you want to talk to somebody. It don't make no more fucking sense. I'm at a bar minding my business, cooling off, just being cool, like I am, chilling. Woman gonna come to me, think she just ask me the goddamn thing she want to do. She said, Mac, I said, yeah, honey. So can I ask you a question? I said, yeah. She said, does pussy taste like pumpkin pie? Made me mad as hell. I said, don't ask me no damn question like that. I ain't never had no pumpkin pie. Kick it! You don't understand. Yo, shit, tired of this shit. I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. When you make love to a black woman, I'm going to tell you how you do it. You got to be good. I'm not talking about myself. Because you know a fuck ain't number 50 pumps. Count if you ain't got nothing to do. It ain't number 5 minutes, but the foreplay make it seem longer. But you get a woman, black woman, man, I'm going to tell you something. I don't care how meek that woman is, how soft-spoken she is. If you're giving her the dick, whatever wrong with you, she going to let you know. You can have a patch on your eye, your leg could be broke. If you get up there, she'll be like, woo, shit, you patch-eyed motherfucker. You broke leg son of a bitch. You know you in this motherfucker. Kick ass. You don't understand, goddamn. And you know what's funny when you make love to a woman and she on top and the phone rings? That's some funny shit. When she on the phone ring, man, every time she, you know, the phone be ringing, ring, ring, you get cool and shit. Ring, baby, don't answer. Ring, I gotta answer. Ring, baby, don't answer. Ring, it might be a job. Ring, and every time, you know, she pick up the phone, start fiddle-faddling with, you know. When she pick it up, every time she start to talk, give her the dick. She'll be like, hey, hello. What I'm doing? This is when you get what I'm doing? Oh, nothing. But I love my black people. I'm going to tell you something, but we got to stop the violence. We got to vote. Stop the violence and vote. Because I did a show in Chicago. I mean that. Stop this violence. I was in Chicago. I did a show for Cook County Jail. And you know, over 40% of the brothers in jail for nothing. And they had a little survey, a little panel thing. We got to ask the inmates questions, you know. So I asked the inmate. I said, hey, my brother, what you in for? He said, nothing. Brothers got this thing about being a punk. What is a punk? I never did understand that for the sake of my life. He said, nothing. That's how long you're in for. He said, ever? Now, you know, it's a long time. You take the four off that motherfucker. I said, man, I said, so what you in for? I ain't no punk. I didn't tell on my boy. I said, what, you in jail for no motherfucker? No, you ain't no punk. You a new fool. But I'd be damned if I served time for any of you motherfuckers. I'd be in court just like this. Judge be like, who are you? I'd be like, punk. You know what I mean? He killed that motherfucker. Shot him in the head full time, kicked him in the face. I tried to call you, but the line was busy. I'm burning Mac, I'm out of here.